about personal finance. He provides insight into making the most on your money using over 20 years of experience. Money Matters is brought to you in part by Petso Financial Consultants and Mountain West Bank, Idaho's community bank, with offices in Boise, Ketchum, and Coeur d'Alene. Dave Petso, the host of Money Matters, is a certified financial planner professional and an investment advisor representative with Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated. Registered representative securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer, member FINRA SIPC. Investment advisor representative Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated and Petso Financial Consultants are not affiliated companies. And now the host of Money Matters, Dave Petso.
Hello and good morning. Well, it's all Greece all the time, apparently, right? It just continues to be jabbered about. But what is interesting is when Greece is going to go do a deal, not do a deal, so they... And then they come back to doing a deal, then the market rallies. And when they're not doing a deal, the market doesn't fall. So what is it, right? What is the deal? Are we going to do a deal? Is it important or is it not? And really, you know, really, there's 11 million people in Greece. 11 million. And I know they're critical exporters of olive oil, but nothing else. I think they have the GDP the size of Vermont. It's just noise. It really is. And I know, I'm sure that there's a good number of people out there listening and that want to believe in contagion. They want to believe. Because you have to want to believe this stuff. You have to. I mean, all of history shows that we're not going to head for an oblivion, whoever the president is, whatever the inflation rate is, whatever the deficit is. And it'll be some currency crisis going on. And I know that there are those that really do seem to want to believe, gravitate towards every piece of negative news, cling to it, and grab for more. That is a function of our human nature. And it's true of most people. Almost all. It's just hard to ignore the negativity. But other than that, other than really trying hard to talk about this as a contagion, as it's the end of the world, and Greece is some kind of big news, other than that, the only reason it's in the news is there is no news. There's no other news. Why did the market do what it did on Friday? I don't know. Read the headlines, but they're not true, I'll bet. I'll bet they're different on one thing to another. I'll bet it wasn't oil prices. I'll bet it wasn't Greece. I'll bet it wasn't Russia. I'll bet it wasn't the yen euro to dollar ratio. I'll just bet it wasn't any of those things. I'll bet more buyers showed up than sellers because we had a nice little rally. Thanks for watching today. 24 hours a day of CNBC and blogging on top of that. It's nonsensical. It's really no way to live your life. And I know, and don't get me wrong, as I go into and talk about it today, I've got some stuff I really want to talk about today. It really, I mean, you know, I'm traveling to the last winter conference, and a lot of times I'll have a little recording there and you know, for at least an hour or so. But I have some stuff I want to talk about today. And I'm assuming you're going to bail me out and with the other half of the time, and we're going to have a conversation, right, where they're going to have questions, we're going to have comments. I don't know why it is that God has wired us to be negative. I don't know why. I'm not sure. I really don't know why. I know at some point we had saber-toothed tigers in the jungle. We had things that would eat us. And so we needed to be aware and paranoid at all times. But I don't know why, in any semblance of a modern world, even not even a modern world. I mean, you know, medieval world. Any world, There just aren't things out there that eat us. There's things that kill us, other human beings. And certainly the world used to be incredibly violent. I know you feel like it's more violent today, but it's not. And that's not actually arguable, but people will argue it. I know they will. Because it doesn't feel that way. It doesn't feel that way when you get to watch people's heads chopped off. That feels really violent. But comparable to all of history, far fewer people die violent deaths at the hands of other human beings as a percentage of the population. Far fewer. Like hundreds of times fewer. I know it doesn't feel that way, but that's the way it is. So accept that for one moment. We can argue about that later. What I really want to talk about is the hardest thing in investing. And I may even part two this in the second hour. I don't know yet. But this is a thing that's just been really, really bugging me. Compelling me to talk about, to write about. Because the toughest thing of investing is, of course, to buy cheap and sell dear. Now, don't go away yet. I know that's overly simplistic. But ask yourself this. If it's that simple, why don't I ever do it? Ever. Why do I buy stuff and then justify why it was smart to buy? And I don't just mean a car. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about investments. Why is it that it comes to my attention that a stock has tripled in value or gold has gone up a lot, and it never does, so that's a big news item. So now it comes to my attention that I should be buying it. The silver finally makes a move, goes, what, to $40 or $50 an ounce, and now I should buy it. I know it's only at 16 today, so it must be a really big bargain. I don't know. I know I can't eat it, and I know it doesn't produce anything. Why did people chase real estate in the middle 2000s? Why? If you buy low and sell high, why did you chase tech stocks in 1999? Why did you chase emerging markets a couple years ago? Why, if you always buy low and sell high? It is an important thing, but I don't want to talk about the side of it because there's really two sides, right? And that is the emotions of it and our intellect. I don't even want to talk about the emotions because we talk about the emotions. We've talked about it before. And besides, nobody likes to admit that they're emotional about decisions that shouldn't be emotional. So people don't admit it. So fine, I give up. You're not emotional. You're stoic, non-emotional. You're a Vulcan. Okay? I get that. So let's talk about the intellect. It is the biggest problem in my mind, not even emotions. We can get past the emotional side, right? We can have people hold us accountable to not bailing out at the bottom. We can do that. We can find people to do that. But we are so plugged in. Right? And I do. I totally appreciate people that care enough to send me some link to a blog or to they care enough to send me something. But the reality is I don't have time to read every doomsday blog, and I'm not going to because it does no good. It doesn't look good. It doesn't make a young man a better lifelong companion to sit him in front of the TV and watch pornography. It doesn't make me a better advisor to sit in front of the computer monitor or television and input nothing but negative. Nothing. That's not putting your head in the sand. There's plenty of news out there. You can't ignore the world we live in. But this idea of inputting 24/7 what I want to believe, that there's some kind of conspiracy theory out there, that there's really a group of puppet masters running the world, that the guys that say, hey, you know what, the dollar didn't collapse the last time I said, or the time before, because really the guys in charge, you know, like they just weren't going to let it happen this time. It wasn't, on their plate. But I wasn't really wrong. no, you were really wrong. And you scared people, and they never invested from 3,000 on the Dow to 6,000 to 12,000 to 15,000 to 18,000. Nobody invests. No, no, because it's all going to end anytime soon. I don't know why the hardest thing to do is to buy the easiest, best performing investments in the world. I don't know why. I don't know why we equate short-term losses with permanent losses. I don't understand any of that. I don't. I know people believe that, but I do not get it. I do not understand why it is so hard to understand that when the market falls from, I don't know, 15,000 to 10, you have not lost a third of your money unless you sell. I don't know why this is hard. It doesn't stop the dividends from coming in. They don't even reduce them, typically. They just go up over time. The market is certain to have corrections. But when people say, you lost because you sold, the market never has gone to zero, not even during the Great Depression. It didn't go to zero. And besides, what's silly about the Great Depression, talking about in stocks, is acting as if the average person owns stocks. Or even that the stock market caused the Great Depression. Like the Dust Bowl didn't exist. And all of the bad Fed policies didn't exist. The ones that so many people want to have right now. Let's get real austere. Let's not make sure we have enough liquidity. Let's not worry about deflation. We have to worry about those things because they're terrible things. They're terrible. The consequences are horrible. I don't know how we're going to get rid of the trillions of dollars either. I got it. But the fact of the matter is for 5 years, 5 years, the doomsayers have been wrong, period. Wrong and a period. Not wrong, but wrong with a period. When we went from 6,000, a little over 6,000 on the Dow to 18 today, that's wrong. And when we pulled back to 15, they were wrong. Not right for a day. Not intellectually smarter, not because they have it figured out. Here's the key. Here's the thing. Data is what we hear all the time. It's nothing but noise. It's like trying to take a drink from a fire hose. That's what data is. It comes at you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. TV, blogging, internet. What about this? What about that? And fear sells. Don't forget that. I'll come back to that in a moment. But it sells. It sells. Optimism does not. Optimism is a process. Sure, it sells. Everybody likes optimistic people. I get that. But they don't buy their argument. But we lean to and buy into absolute nonsense. As long as it's doomsday-oriented, fear-based. A couple hours from now, there'll be somebody talking about, you don't want to risk your money in the market. You can have market returns with no risk. Really? No, you can't, actually. And everybody knows that. Fear sells. Okay, I'll come back to that later. Data is like taking a drink from a fire hose. You just can't do it. But incredibly, most people think that this flow of data actually helps them get closer to the truth about where we're going. Now, let me digress just for a second. I'll come back to this. You can't predict the future. Period. That's it. Now, I know that's not acceptable to people, so let's talk about how easy it is for the great investors of all time, like Warren Buffett, to predict the future. Says he can't. Doesn't seem to trade stocks very actively, like maybe he actually believes that. John Templeton, we've spent millions of dollars and years in study trying to predict market movements. Conclusion, we can't. Nobody can. Nobody can predict the future. And here's the deal. Even if you got part of the future right, nice guess, by the way, but if you did, do you know how the markets will react? Of course you don't. You can say you do, but think about it. Think about what you knew if the first go around in Europe, the pigs nations were melting down. You knew that the markets would go down. Sorry, they didn't. And of course we all knew interest rates were going to go higher. That didn't work out either. And even when we get things right, we don't know how the market's going to react. Incredibly important. Okay, so let's talk about data. Data is nothing more than data. It doesn't even have a context. It just exists. It's this flow of stuff out there. It's not even information, because people don't even know what to do with it. Quick example. We're sitting around, and somebody says, so what do you think about the dollar-yen ratio? What do you think is going to happen? Oh, I'm really worried about it. I tell you, first of all, when you say dollar-yen ratio, well over 95% of people have no idea why that's important. They've heard people talk about it, but that's it. Fair? Is that fair? Now, so let's say I'm smart guy on TV reporting the dollar-yen and how incredibly important this is, and I don't know what's going to happen if we get to the 99 line here where the 5-minute chart crosses the 30-day into a death chart. I'm telling you, this is not good news. Okay, now we go where? Is that any information to you and I? No. No, it's not. We don't even know what the hell they're talking about, frankly. Okay? It's not. It's just data. But in the context of sounding fearful, we take it as information. Aha, this is bad. There's bad stuff happening out there. I don't know what it is, but it's bad. And here's the worst part. People take this now as even knowledge, and information isn't even close to knowledge. We barely have a context for what it is, but we don't even know how to use it. Oh, I know what that is. How do I use it? I don't know. So what's the point? We're getting a flow of data that isn't even information because we don't know what it is in most cases. That'd be like, for me, it'd be a flow of data telling me what's going on in Hollywood. Well, I don't know what's going on in Hollywood. So it's just a flow of, Joe is married to who, and Gene just dumped Sam, and that has absolutely no meaning to me. None. It certainly doesn't somehow become knowledge for me. I have no context for this because I don't know Sam, and I don't know Jane, and I don't know who they were with before. I just know that somebody breathlessly told me that Jane dumped Sam, and I should be worried or concerned or something about that. And wisdom? It's on another planet. It's on another planet. I mean, think about this. Think about the world has worked remarkably well. In spite of human intervention, remarkably well. The markets have performed incredibly well. That's the evidence. In spite of wars, world wars. For those of you just saying, it's just a little thing over in Iraq. I guess, okay, fine. It's just a little thing in Iraq. How about a world war? How about two of them? How about a Great Depression? How about Jimmy Carter and Barack Obama? How about budget deficits? This isn't our first time. How about all that? It works. That's the evidence. Now, people want to make the big call. This reminds me of a group of Christians going around and going, I think this is the end times. Oh, I get it. Okay, so let's see. Caesar, Stalin, Hitler, right. To me, you see, the whole point here is this. That's a big call. Don't you think that's a big call? I think it's a big call. No, this is it. These are like the end times. Okay. It's a big call to say this is the financial collapse. Because we always bounce back. Always have. That's the evidence. What you're doing is making the big bet. So you should be paid thousands to one. Maybe millions to one. Because, you see, you've never been right. It has never, ever been true. That's a big call. That's a really big call. This is it. This is the one time. This is it. You just don't understand. This right now. Because it's never happened. So read the blogs. Read the stuff. Bury yourself in nothing but what's wrong in the world. Use our human nature that really relies on that 90% of everything is negative. It's really hard to be positive about anything. And that well over 90% of the news is negative anyway. But let's look even harder and deeper for what's even more negative than that. And use confirmation bias that we are well-read, educated, and informed of all the bad stuff. And how that helps us invest, I do not know. I do not know why people do that. It sounds to me also, frankly, like a very unhappy existence. Our number is 580-5436-580-KIDO. It's dave@petzofinancial.net. We'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436. Idaho's place to talk is Money Matters with Dave Petzo on 580 KIDO, Idaho's place to talk.
Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us. 580-5436, 580-KIDO. It's dave@petzofinancial.net. I hope, I can only hope, that those folks, some folks that maybe I spoke a little close to the heart there, are not offended. I don't mean to offend. I actually do try. I'm really trying to enlighten, if you will. I don't have all the wisdom. I don't have it all. But I certainly do know that the markets work. They have worked. I certainly know what's set out there. I certainly know what is bouncing around. And I certainly know different products. I know that fear sells. I know that people want to believe the unbelievable. They want to believe that they can get market returns without market risk. It's what our human nature wants to believe, particularly if we mix in a good batch of fear. Well, you don't want to see your money go away. You can't really afford that kind of risk when you're 65 or 70, can you? Again, the misunderstanding that markets go to zero, they never have. And if they did, my argument would be, so you think your cash has value, but all the corporation's cash, facilities, stuff doesn't, but yours does? So I just really don't understand the argument. Yes, prices fluctuate. That is why. It is the only reason why. The only reason why we get 10% returns. 10. That's not just attractive in a world that has zero interest rates. That's incredibly attractive compared to bonds. And then the other thing that they're always selling is gold. Really? As some gold or silver or palladium or platinum, copper, zinc, whatever, gravel, don't know. Because they're all really the same. Some are prettier than others, but actually gravel is used, so I guess it's probably more valuable than gold. But the rate of return, as it's always talked about, the rate of return on gold, you know, it's historically provided a, you know, whatever against inflation. Barely, if at all. Most periods of time, it does not. It earns less than inflation. It's not been a store of value. It's been a destructor of value. But fear sells. It really does. And so when we add to that and live in that and we continue to dwell on everything that's wrong and not even considering what could go right. In a world that we automatically dwell on what's wrong. If you try to think about what's right, it's still you're going to think about what's wrong. You can't help it. It's human nature. And again, well over 90% of the news is negative. So let's get real about it. You don't have to look. You got to duck. You've got to duck. It's crazy. It's crazy how negative we are. Look, we won. We won the lottery of life. You won. Take a victory lap. Put your hands in the air. We won. We were born in the most abundant time on the planet, in the greatest nation that there's ever been. Quit going forth and figuring out what's wrong. You won. You won the lottery of life. Be joyful. Our number is 580-543-6580-KIDO. I think we lost one. We lost Walt earlier. Walt, call back. Come on. Give us a call back. And the rest of you, give us a call. Here's the deal. I've got a half hour in the can, and I'm going to play that next hour if we don't get some phone calls, okay? Phone calls, interaction today. Seriously. I want to know you're there. I want to know what you're thinking about so we can have some fun in the next hour and a half. We'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzel. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's place to talk. Money Matters with Dave Petzel on 580-KIDO, Idaho's place to talk.
Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us. 580-5436 is our number. 580-KIDO. Hey, and our email is dave@petzofinancial.net. Speaking of which, let's do an email, shall we? Dave, while the dividend yield on U.S. stocks as measured by the S&P 500 is down around 2%, there are some other areas of the world where yields are much higher, and really a lot higher. Australia is at 5%, and European indices are above 4.5%. What do you think of these areas of the world as investments? Would you recommend an ETF or mutual fund of some sort versus picking individual dividend stocks? Just want to know your thoughts and opinion. Mike, thank you very much. Great question. I almost put this in our education segment today, you know, for the second hour. But I don't have to go 15 minutes to explain. I think that, for example, these other areas of the world are very attractive. I would be careful to be real selective, like say, I want to go to Australia. And the reason why, Australia is dealing with some additional problems now. That's why their markets are down. And you know, the additional problems, of course, are they're very natural resource-based. And we know what's going on, not just with oil, but all of the minerals, right? The copper, ores. I mean, they're just getting crushed. They're just at multi-year lows. And that does not bode well, of course, for profitability or, you know, overall for the whole country. The second part of that, though, is when we pick on individual ones, unless we have a real clear understanding, you really don't know what's going on with the stocks of those countries. Are they really growth-oriented? Are they keeping enough of their profits back? Or do they distribute all of them, say, the way a REIT does? And in some countries, they kind of do, or some companies within some countries aren't really all that growth oriented. They'll pay one dividend a year, and it tends to be most all the profits. They just really aren't as growth oriented. And that's fine for pure income in the short term. But if a company's not growing and raising their income over the years, there's two problems with that. One is the margin of safety. If a company is paying out everything they bring in, there isn't that margin of safety, is it, right? They could easily cut a bad year, boom, they're down. And the second part is if they're not growing, we're not really growing that stream of income. And that, of course, is important with inflation nonetheless, as well as you've probably been listening or hopefully been listening long enough to know that those are kind of the super secret best performing stocks are those that grow their income over the years. Those are the real jewels out there that we want to find. Even if they're not yielding a lot today, we want that growth of income that grows rapidly over the years, because that will mean a rapidly growing stock price as well. Now, as far as overseas investments, absolutely. Yes, absolutely. I think they offer much better value than the U.S., particularly as much as people are talking about the U.S. and how it's the only place in the world and it feels so much safer. I really like the chatter. It's not frustrating when clients come and say, you know, I'm really a little bit nervous about what's going on overseas. That tells me that we're getting enough negative chatter about what's going on overseas that the bargains really are there, right? They really are there. It's not just we perceive them or measured by against price-to-earnings ratios or dividend yields that we are getting bargains. It's also bargains because people are flat and nervous. So that's not really a negative at all. And then finally, you ask about ETFs and you ask about mutual funds. ETFs are difficult for me because, especially in foreign markets, because you're just buying the big companies in that market. There really isn't any careful research being done. They're not looking beneath the surface. They're just, for example, if you buy a Brazilian ETF, you're going to get Petrobras Brazil. Well, I don't want that. I mean, PBR might be out of business soon. It's amidst of corruption. I don't want it, not just because it's down to $6 from, you know, 30 or something. I don't want it, period. But if it's in an ETF and it's 20% of the index, that's 20% of your whole portfolio there. So I would use mutual funds broadly when we're dealing with emerging other countries particularly, and you don't need to pick the countries either. I think that's very dangerous for most people to do. All right, thank you, Mike. Appreciate it. And we're going to take a break here, actually our final break this hour, so we would love to hear from you. When we come back, it's 580-5436, 580-KIDO. And once again, if you prefer, email dave@petzofinancial.net. We'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's place to talk. This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo on 580-KIDO, Idaho's place to talk.
Hello, welcome, and thank you so much for joining us. Our number, of course, is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. And it is dave@petzofinancial.net is our email for our live. If you prefer to give us a shout out during the week, tell us what you want to talk about, what ideas you have for the education segment, what questions you would like answered, right? And we would love to do that. I'd love to get back with you if need be. Sometimes once in a while we use it on the weekend as well. This is just a terrific question for, broadly speaking, for everybody. But also there you'll find podcasts, you'll find articles and calculators to help you with your financial planning. So with that, let's go ahead and go to the phones. Let's go to Judy in Caldwell. Judy, thank you for calling. Go ahead, please.
Yes, I bought some coffee stock 17 years ago, and I just found out this month that the stock was sold, and I called the CEO for a letter of verification so I could write the amount off on my taxes, but I still haven't got any confirmation from him. Can you tell me what I need to do in this?
So it's worthless is what you're saying. Is that right,
Jim? Yes.
Okay. So that was, probably the local coffee deal?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. All right. So I would go ahead and just keep bugging him, call again, and so you can get a written confirmation. But what I would do is, at the very least, in discussion, find out when they declared bankruptcy. Okay?
Okay.
Actually, you know, I guess that, pardon me, are you doing your taxes for last year?
Yes.
Okay. Write it off last year. So talk to your accountant. Do you use an accountant?
Yes.
Okay. Tell the accountant what happened and that you can't seem to get a confirmation, but you'll keep working on it. But you need to write that off, okay? And so you have a date. So when you go in, have a date that you invested, okay?
Okay.
So let's say, I'm thinking this was like 15 years ago when most of this was going on.
Yes.
Does that sound right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, if you don't have an exact date, make it up. It's okay. It's all right. All right?
Okay.
You're not going to get thrown in jail for it. You definitely put the money in, okay? So, but if you can find an old check, that's even better, and then just set it aside. But I will say this, Judy, it's not you should make up the numbers or anything like that, but I don't want you to miss the deduction because you don't get all of the paperwork. The IRS isn't asking that. They really aren't. They are asking for your best effort to get the right price on both the buy and the sell. They know that there's sometimes people have bought things for 30 or 40 or 50 years, and they've split. They've been reinvesting for maybe 20 or 30 of those years. There's no chance of being exact, and that's okay. They don't throw people in jail for that. Just do your best, and you know about what time it was bought. Put that down for your buy date, okay?
Yeah.
And then I would just pick a date last year, and your accountant can help you with that. Yeah, we're just going to write it off as December 1st. It's done. You know, you just didn't write it off before when the bankruptcy was official. So now you're going to write it off today, and that way you can capture your deduction, or I should say last year you're going to write it off. So you pick a sale date, which is then zero, and then you get the full deduction for what you put in.
Okay.
Now, of course, I'm going to say this. You absolutely need to check with your accountant and make sure that he's okay, he or she is okay with that, okay?
Okay.
But you don't worry, you'll get your deduction, you should. And I would go ahead and call that company and just keep after them until they send you a confirmation letter. It can't be that hard for them.
Okay, fine.
Okay?
Thank you.
You're very welcome, Judy. Have a great day.
You too. Bye.
Thanks for the call. Bye-bye. And our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Now, you know, we were talking earlier, and I'm going to touch on this some more in the next hour, and that is really this over-intellectualizing that we do. Now, of course, the Brits, they call it clever by half, which I love that. I just love that whole thought process, right? That, you know what we're doing, we're outfoxing ourselves. We think so hard that sometimes, and I get this, common sense is not common. I know that. And I know most people think they have common sense when they don't. Or they have some, when they have, you know, they have a lot when they have very little. I totally get that. Totally. We human beings, you know, so it's like I mentioned many times, right? We human beings always think we're greater than we are at things, right? 78% of all drivers think they're better than average? Well, that's just not possible. So those bad drivers don't even know they're bad, right? So, hey, I think I've got enough time here real quickly here. Let's jump on another email. Mark, thank you very much. Mark and Meridian, why should your average investor use actively managed funds when most statistics I see reported show that actively managed funds underperform their closest index benchmark? Are the statistics wrong? What is your take on this issue? Mark, it's a great question, and I am going to have to set this one aside, okay? Because I do talk a lot about indexing versus managed accounts. I'll give you a little bit on this because it's a fantastic question, but it's a very evolved question. I mean, I have to go into it a lot. And so what I'll do is over the next month or two, I'll again do a segment on, and you can certainly look at our podcasts. I have many, many of them. In fact, I think the last time Jennifer Stone and Tom Brown did the show, they also talked about it as well. There's a number of statistics out there that are very, very interesting. But, Mark, it is a fair question to ask, and you're absolutely right when you just look at the cover of it and say the average mutual fund is less. It is, and I think by definition it would be, right? I mean, if you think about it, the average is going to be slightly below. It has to be in the long run. So any particular year, one way or another, where it's exaggerated is an issue. It's something that's going to be resolved. I mean, I shouldn't say it's an issue. It's just it's an outlier. You're not going to see managed accounts vastly outperform the index, except for a year or two, and then things will move back more towards an equilibrium. And the opposite actually is true. But here's why. I don't just completely buy into that. Number one, and I will show these statistics and run through them with you. There are groups out there that over long periods of time, well, they flat beat the market. They flat do. They just flat do. And so I'll come back to that. But there's a lot of stats, and I will, and I have shared those many times. But the main thing to bear in mind is the indices, as I've mentioned before, are not diversified. They're a specific area, and they can be where a fund says, hey, that's all we're trying to do is buy large cap U.S. only funds. That's fine. And that would be a good S&P fund. But make sure the indices balance out. And the second part of that is, especially when people are taking income, it can be devastating, because when the market goes down big, and it does sometimes, and you're sitting there with the S&P 500 going off 30, 40, or 50%, and you're trying to take income, you got big problems, man. Big, big problems. All right, I got to take a quick break.
One who failed to mention that Dr. K's pet clinic moved. Tom's wife also failed to mention it.
Tom, late for every meeting because he forgot. Tom?
Oh, he heard her not say it.
Okay.
Anyway, Tom's dog, Kevin, ate an entire block of cheese.
Was Kevin sick of the dog?
Not funny. Serious. And I knew exactly where to send Tom. To the new location of Dr. K's Pet Clinic. Off Karcher Road, right by the Edwards 14 and Buffalo Wild Wings.
I bet Tom's wife told him not to leave the cheese out.
Admit it. I am a hero.
If you admit, I'm funny.
Your pet is part of the family, and when your pet needs veterinary care, Dr. K and his staff make your pet their number one priority. Dr. K's Pet Clinic provides weekend appointments, digital radiography, in-house lab services, surgical procedures, and emergency care. Dr. K's Pet Clinic has moved just off Karcher Road next to the Edwards 14 and Buffalo Wild Wings in Nampa. Visit drkspetclinic.com or...
Hello and welcome to Money Matters, hour number two. I'm Dave Petzo, and of course, these are my opinions. My opinions only, not the station, not my broker-dealer. And if we talk about a stock, or we talk about a sector, or we talk about a country, it doesn't mean you should be investing there. I don't know what your portfolio looks like. And the whole absurdity of the idea that we're going to be out there telling people what to buy, and sell is, well, it is more than silly. I think it's destructive. This world does not need more trading. We need less. We need to learn to do less. Quit overthinking things so much. Quit being clever by half. That's really what we need to be doing, right? Not reading more stuff, listening to more input about what to buy, or sell. In this world of, you know, whether you're 40 years old, you're 50 years old, 63, 85, 84, doesn't matter, 24 years old. Even if you go further back, your parents, your grandparents, the market's done 10 per year on average. Never does 10. Does way more or way less, not exactly 10. This, by the way, is an important point because it throws people off terribly. 10. Like the gravitational pull of the equator. It's 10. Now, okay, if we want to be more exact, all those names or dates I gave you, it was actually, you know, for compliance reasons, by the way. Okay, it's 9.99% on average to 11.02%. On those ages I gave you. It's 10. When we trade, when we move things around, when we buy and sell, we don't do 10 anymore. We do a whole lot less. Warren Buffett hardly ever trades stocks. Okay, given. It's a given. Best investor of our time. You may not like him or his tax policy, whatever. Don't care. It has nothing to do with what we're talking about. Favorite holding periods forever. Hardly ever trades him at all. John Templeton, my hero mentor. His turnover rate was 20%. That means the average stock he held the mutual fund for the 30 years, he ran the fund, and he beat the stock market by 5 percentage points per year. By the way, that's not even a little bit. That's ridiculous. 5 a year. I mean, that's not a little bit more. That's exponential, by the way, on when you're taking interest rate percentages over any reasonable amount of time. It's exponential growth. 5 years he held the average stock. 5. Peter Lynch, Michael Price, long-term hold. You want more? Here's more, real quick. Dalbar study. Go ahead and Google it. It's actually a healthy Google, right, instead of endofworld.com. Put in there maybe Dalbar, D-A-L-B-A-R. Dalbar studies. What are they? The Dalbar study is a study of investor returns, not the market. What does the average investor get in the market? So whether it's the last 20 years, the last 30 years, it's from 1995 to 2013, whatever you want to slice and dice it, it works about like this. The market did 10 or 12. They even did this during the best 20-year period ever, which was like 17% a year. The average investor got less than 5. The average investor dollar invested in mutual funds did less than 5. Not because of crappy management, bad behavior. Peter Lynch said it this way. When he was retiring, he was asked this question by reporters. By a reporter, anyway. You must be so proud of how, wasn't asked a question, it was this comment. You must be so proud of what you've achieved for your investors. And he said, no. The average investor with us made no money. They bought and sold so much. We're hot, we're cold, they buy, they sell. So much that they erased the gains. Buying and selling. You don't need any more of that noise, that's for sure. That's for sure. That's for sure. Now, let me finish up what I was talking about at the beginning, and then we're going to go ahead and take a call here from Michael. Since we are already so worried, we already are. Okay, remember, for those who weren't here the first hour, I talked extensively about how we are clever by half. We have so much information. We take it in and take it in and take it in and take it in. And that we're really making the big call that this is it. I mean, we go buy all the books. We buy all the literature from the Warren Buffetts and Peter Lynch's and Michael Price's and John Temple's. We just ooze all that. We want all that knowledge, except for the knowledge of the part that you can't time the market. But let's accept that for a moment, just for a moment, that you can't. But everybody's sitting around intellectualizing why the world is ending and buying into fear and fear-based products. Products that tell you you could have market returns without risk. Goodness gracious, your great-grandparents that never graduated from junior high school know that is not true. Because we all do. We all know that's not true. But if we're living in fear, figuring out every day what's more wrong than is natural anyway, because we're all naturally worried anyway, and you can't get away from the news. It's not putting your head in the sand. It's not being a Pollyanna. It's actually trying to fight the disease, not give in. It's a disease. A negative disease, and we're fighting this. Or are we? And so if we don't fight it, we can't invest. We don't even start businesses. We don't live forward at all. In the most abundant time man has been on earth, we won the lottery. You're born in the best time in the best country on earth. And how big a call it is to say, yeah, but anything. Quit yeah-butting everything. They always have. It's flat out a big call, period. Period. To say this is it. It's done. It's over. It's a big call. Because it's never been true. You fight all of history making that call. So since we are already so naturally worried, we already are wired that way. Already we are. And then we go in front of the news and our computers and suck in so much negative news. It's all negative. And they're all telling you, right? All, especially the doomsday blogs, right? But if you subscribe now to my newsletter, we'll help you navigate the end of the world, part 183. I know we weren't right last time, but that's only because the Trilateral Commission of Soros and whoever it is got together and decided they wouldn't let the dollar fail this time. So we weren't really wrong. It just was, it'll be this time. Same group, different mantra, but repetitive mantra. Too much deficit, too much whatever, but we'll help you. Just subscribe, and we'll navigate this together. Buy some gold. Set it aside. Make sure you have a pretty brick that won't do anything. Maybe five of them, and we'll charge you a huge commission to buy them, but just buy it from us. Fear sells. Fear sells. And that's why we believe product pushers, even when we don't. We know in our gut it's a lie. We know it's not true. We know it's not true. But it's so powerful, fear is. And when we input this consistently, we add more and more and more fear. It doesn't help. It doesn't help. It hurts. It hurts. Makes it so we don't want to sit still. And then when we watch TV and we think it's information, even from people that are generally smart and generally upbeat, like Jim Cramer is. He's an upbeat guy. But he's telling people to buy, 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 and sell, 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 and turn over their portfolios, which is just totally wrong. And then you fight that. And that's how we end up having fractions of the returns of the market. Because we're clever. By half. We got it figured out, man. We're plugged in and wired in. And we got it figured out. Our number is 580-5436-580-KIDO. Let's go to Mike in Middleton. Mike, thank you for waiting. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, hi, Dave. Hey, Dave, I fell into a woe is me type of trap from a former friend. And what I'm wanting to know is, can I write off the money that I loaned him as a bad debt?
That's a giant maybe. What a good question.
I've got the receipts, and if he had any intention of paying me back, he would tell me.
Yeah.
You know, hey, Mike, I can't pay you all of the money back this time, but how about $25 now, about $50 next payday, things of that nature. He has no intention of it.
Right, right. Do you have a contract?
Well, he told me I've got the messages on my cell phone, the text messages, and the money order receipts, the duplicate copies. He told me that he would pay me back when he gets his income tax return.
Okay. And he's not going to?
No, no. He has no intention of it. As a matter of fact, Dave, he avoids me.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. I gotcha. Okay. So, I'm not going to give you, the tax advice on that.
Right.
Personally, what I would do is check with your, accountant on it. Or check
Don't
with the
one.
Accountant. And here's what I think you need to do is probably get it properly documented.
Okay.
Meaning you do need to have copies of that for if the IRS asks. And I think I would probably try it.
Yeah, I've got, the copies of the money orders and that sort of thing. And the text messages on my cell phone, those I can simply take a picture of and put them in my return.
Right. I think the danger here is, and this might help you feel better, it's both a danger as well as, in this case, a good thing. And that is, I think it'll be a taxable gain to him.
Oh, hey, that's right.
Okay, I think it's actually a forgiven debt is still gain. If you're writing it off, the IRS isn't going to accept that somebody else isn't paying taxes. So you may need to file a 1099 or something like that. And if you did, it would be reportable. And maybe you would also get his attention again, and he might decide to make payments. I don't know. I'm guessing he's just not going to pay you back or thinks that's okay.
Nope.
But I think you have to go through a process here where you can't just write it off and expect that that's just going to go away.
Okay. Okay.
Plus, why not? If he's not even going to acknowledge it, if he's not going to, then why don't you at least make it taxable to him and give him a little bit of a headache?
Yeah, there you go. There you go. Another question. Since he gave me the woe is me type story so often, how can I write him off as a charity? Donations to a charity?
You can't.
Oh.
He's not a charity.
The way he told me, you would think.
I understand, but unless you are a legal charity, meaning you filed the paperwork and all.
Right.
And individuals are not anyway. Well, maybe Jesse Jackson gets away with that. But other than the Jesse Jacksons of the world, unless this guy was screaming racism, I don't think he's I shouldn't say that. Anyway, but the point is that you understand. They're just because some of the folks out there, like Jesse Jackson, have gotten away with it, is not mean an individual is a charity and they are not.
Yeah. Okay. Hey, okay. Another question. Why is it that the lawmakers pass laws that affect you and me, but yet they never pay income taxes?
No, they do pay income taxes, but what they usually don't, there's never run a business. And so all the regulatory hurdles that you have to go through, they do not understand and don't care.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's to me, the tax rate is not even the biggest issue. It's horrible. Don't get me wrong. When you tax on the most productive people, which are always the small businesses that hire people, that's
exactly.
The most productive in society. I know there's a few people riding around in jets and all that stuff in Hollywood and stuff, and that's like 1% of the really super wealthy. It's because people have created something, products, and employed people that
right.
People want. That's all the wealth in the country, really. So when we say that and we look at those folks and you recognize that the rate is over 50% now, that's too high. But that isn't even the biggest problem to our economy. It is the regulatory burden on corporations.
Oh, I know.
Yeah.
I know. But anyway, getting back to this bad debt, just go and talk to a tax accountant.
Yep.
Okay.
Talk to a tax accountant. Do you have an accountant?
No, I don't. I don't need one because my income is not enough to worry about, and things are paid off.
All right. Well, here's what you should do, and we can kind of steer you into another direction if you need it, okay?
Okay.
But talk to Tom Brown in our office. He does some taxes. He's not a CPA. He's a tax preparer.
Okay.
He'll probably steer you in the right direction if you need to. He knows a lot of accountants, CPAs.
Okay.
Give you that if need that information, if it's more complicated. That's one answer. The other is literally to pick up the phone and call the IRS.
Yeah, right. Okay. I can do that.
All right.
Okay. Thanks again, Dave.
You're very welcome. You
take care.
And thanks for the call, Mike.
You bet. Thanks again.
Have a nice day.
I know.
And our number is 580-5436-580-KIDO. It's Dave at PetzoFinancial.net. We're going to be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzel. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's place to talk. Money Matters with Dave Petzel on 580-KIDO, Idaho's place to talk.
Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us. 580-5436 is our number, 580-KIDO, or dave@petzofinancial.net if you want to shoot us an email live during the program. And, of course, always during the week, love to hear from you over at petzofinancial.com, where we also have podcasts, and we've got articles and calculators to help you with your financial advice. And let's go ahead and go to the phone. Let's go to Jim. Jim, thanks for calling.
Morning again, Dave. How's it going?
Wonderful. Wonderful. Thank you. How are you?
Yeah, fine, thanks. I guess you had a pretty good week this last week. I mean, the market.
The market had a great week, didn't it? I mean, really, just a good grease, what grease, right? Just shrugged it all off.
Well, you know, speaking of grease, I mean, and also the old expression, kicking the can down the street. I mean, Greece still has the problems. They may have gotten a reprieve for 4 months, but the problem is still there, so.
Right, exactly. No, it is, and they keep kicking the can down the road. But, you know, in a sense, really, that's exactly what the U.S. has done.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, it really is working. So it's not necessarily a negative when we think about it. Sometimes what an economy needs is to just get, it needs time. It doesn't need a meltdown. It needs time, and then it won't melt down. So I'm not saying you always kick the can down the road. We always avoid pain, but giving Greece some time to get their economy going is not necessarily a bad thing.
True, just so, well, you know, when you talk about economies, and I guess maybe this is good the world over, but there have been many countries, I mean really poor countries in the world, you know, that have run up tremendous debts, and we in Britain and these other countries have marked, you know, just written it off over a period
right.
of time. So, you know, I guess you call it a welfare or whatever, but I mean debt has been written off for a long time, you know.
For all of history, really, yes, absolutely. And just like corporate debt, they write it off, move on.
Yep.
You know, it's, but when it comes to government debt, it is something that is a little more serious. And we're seeing that with Argentina, right? Argentina is really a failed experiment in, hey, we're just not going to pay you money and we're going to keep having a corrupt and socialist country.
I know.
And right now they're really suffering. A very, very, very heavy in, inflation rates there. It's a very poor economy. Argentina is really a sad case in having all kinds of natural resources and blowing it.
Yeah, I mean, the Perones kind of did a job with, you know, in the 50s with them, I guess, in the 40s.
They did.
But I was going to mention, you know, as you know, I believe in buying a good company and holding. And I do believe in holding, not buying and not selling. But is mm-hmm. there a whole industry based on buying and selling stocks?
That's a great point, and certainly Wall Street has had lots of different products that they create, a lot of different, you know, the model used to be more trading than it is or trade-oriented now. But the answer is, Jim, without trading, I think you'd have fewer employees, and you'd certainly have a lot fewer trading platforms out there. If people really did buy and hold, but it still is the key to good investing.
Yeah, I mean, the economy to a large extent, you know, I mean, it's kind of a paradox, you know. I mean, some people, I guess, gain, some people lose. I mean, if nobody bought, then the value, you know, whatever the price wouldn't go up. But the idea is just, I guess, to buy and let everybody else buy and sell.
That's exactly right. We can do it right. There's still plenty of people out there that just can't stop themselves from gambling in the stock market. They can't stop themselves from feeling like the world is ending no matter what the evidence is. They can't stop themselves. And more choose not to. They don't want to. They like the action, whatever it is, whatever they want to do. But evidence is pretty clear to me. Whenever I push the buy or sell button, I am now officially diminishing my returns.
But, you know, the thing is, you as a broker or whatever or an advisor, I mean, you don't make money if people don't sell. If people just bought and never sold, then you wouldn't make any money.
No, that's not true. I'm not paid on transactions. I'm paid on by fees.
Okay, but the fees must come from, you know, whoever takes the money from buying and selling the stock.
No, it comes from our advice, but it's not, our clients, by and large, obviously there's some small one-off types of things, but by and large, it's, they pay fees for our advice. And our advice is not to overly trade. I don't believe in buying and holding forever, Jim. I don't think that that's a good thing to do. There certainly was a time that, to sell GE. There's time to sell IBM. There's times to sell Albertsons here locally, right? Companies sometimes do have a point where they get too expensive, but by and large, you should be holding as long as possible.
Yeah.
I love John Templeton, as you know, but when you have somebody that great who wasn't afraid to buy something and then when the news changed, he'd sell it, that tells you that most of the stocks he held for way more than 5 years. That's what people should be focusing on.
Well, I've focused on the big economic picture, you know. I mean, if there's a problem within GE, you know, if somebody's stealing money or they're inefficient or whatever, I mean, that's a different story. But it's kind of like the old expression, rising tide raises all boats. If the economy is good, then pretty much everybody will prosper. That's true, but we have to be careful with that. I don't believe that Apple will always be the dominant company that it is. Okay? But I certainly, the best thing I've done is to just buy Apple and hold it. I don't trade it. I don't get excited about it. I don't worry about it. I don't sit around and figure out how the iPhone sales that were unbelievable, the greatest quarter that any corporation has ever had in the history of the planet, somehow is bad.
See, well, that is why you have more than one stock. Because if you only had one stock, you would worry about it.
Well, that's fair. That's absolutely fair. But at the same time, you do have more than one stock. And most of my holdings are in mutual funds anyway, because I don't know which companies globally I should be buying. I can guess at it, and some people do. I would rather not guess. I'd rather hire really bright people who are on the ground all over the world, and I would rather think in terms of what is cheap and what is dear and own more of what is cheap and less of what is dear. Don't make all or none calls. And that way I don't have to worry about it.
Well, what gets me is that this time of year, you know, I get the tax stuff, right? And so anyway, I'll have these, you know, so many thousands of dollars on capital gains that some mutual fund manager made, right? And, of course, it doesn't reflect in the value of the stock, but, you know, I get to pay taxes on the capital gains that they did.
That's right. That's right. Some years, and this was a particularly bad year for that, where the capital gains, in many cases, were much higher than the overall returns.
So that's kind of the downside in the whatever. So
there's no question. No question.
Anyway, we'll have another great week.
You do the same. Thanks for the call.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye now. And our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Let's take a break here for Fox News, and we'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzel. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436. Matters with Dave Petzel on 580-KIDO, Idaho's place to talk.
Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us. 580-5436 is our number, 580-KIDO. Do give us a call. We'd love to hear from you. And if you prefer, email, it's dave@petzelfinancial.net. Let's go ahead and go to an email. Speaking of emails, what international areas would you invest in? Would you go with ex-Pacific Asia or emerging markets? Or be specific, do you go to South America, or where, for several choices? Where to avoid? Thank you so very much, Judy. Judy, thank you. All right, so interesting, and I think we addressed this just a little bit earlier with another call. And that is, you don't need to try to figure out what country to invest in. Now, once in a while, you can do something, okay, a little bit crazy, if you will, okay? I think India is an interesting place, really interesting place right now to invest. And it's not going to have much of a weighting in an international or, you know, emerging market fund. So it is possible, and be very careful. It is high risk. You have to think of it that way whenever you pick an individual country. Now, saying that, we're talking about a very small percentage like you would put in any individual stock. And then from there, other than that, I just don't think you fiddle around with that at all. And I don't think the average person should, period. You don't need to be in India. You don't need to be in Russia. You don't need to be rolling the dice in South Africa. But what you need to do is you need to be thinking in terms of emerging markets. And oftentimes people think of that broadly. And the only reason that is broadly is when you use an index, right, that is going to be weighted exactly to market capitalization regardless of the outlook. They're going to have a certain percentage in Venezuela or whatever. It's not Venezuela. That's a bad example. But they're going to have a certain percentage in Russia. They're going to have a certain percentage in China. They're going to have a certain percentage in all of the countries around the world. And they're not going to be picking individual companies. They're just going to pick, you know, a couple out of the index. And that's what always stays there. So it is a very – that is a true index of emerging markets. I certainly don't think that's the way to do it. And it doesn't mean that the index isn't going to outperform a mutual fund here or there over a short period of time. But over the long haul, I would much rather have an overweighting in areas
that the managers are comfortable that there's maybe less corruption than other areas, that there is, therefore my risk is lower, that maybe there are better bargains there, there's higher dividend yields there. I would much rather have them also look at individual companies. I don't want Brazil, I don't want to just own Petro Brazil because I have to have a huge percentage in Brazil. I don't even want to own Brazil, okay? But because of what's going on there. And it's already been, it already is way down. And so if you have an index, you just wrote it down. You have to, by definition. So I feel like you find a good quality, thoughtful, I would prefer you did a value manager in these, with a lot of history, that really knows these markets, a lot of analysts running around the world, billions under management, and they take a thoughtful, long-term approach. In other words, a risk-adjusted thought process. They don't just throw money. And I think that's a very important thought process going forward. Don't try to guess. You don't need to be guessing whether you should be in South America or you should be over in Asia or you should be at India. Get an emerging market fund, and then you start there. And as far as international, let them go everywhere. It shouldn't be Europe-specific. It's, you know, I just don't see any reason for that. I think you can do very well by letting the managers of a global or an international fund buy the great corporations of various countries, buying the ones they should buy, look at their track records, not over the last 1 year, not just 3 year, but what are they doing over 3 year and 5 year and 10 year and 20 year periods, rolling periods, not just the last ones. Just all, you know, look at those types of numbers and see if it fits your profile for risk. That's how I would approach international. Do not try to pick individual countries. All right? Thanks so much for the email. And our number is 580-5436-580-KIDO. We're going to take our final break right now. Want to have your phone calls. When we come back, we'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzel. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436. Idaho's place to talk. Money Matters with Dave Petzel on 580-KITO. Idaho's place to talk.
Hello, welcome, and thanks for joining us. 580-5436 is our number. If you have a question, go ahead and ring us up. This will be our final segment today. If you have any comments or questions during the week, we really do love to hear from you. And if it's easy for you, shoot those questions over to petsofinancial.com. P-E-T-S-O, not the sauce, P-E-T-S-O financial.com. There's also articles and calculators there to help you with your financial planning. And if you don't use Apple Store for any podcast downloads, then you can certainly get those there. And there's sometimes we do point those out, of course, to people so that they're aware that they're out there separated. And there's a couple of them I will mention real quick. And one is, I guess I was thinking of my buddy here a lot this week. You know, John DeWayne has passed away approximately a year ago, and a year ago in a couple weeks, but. You know, I just, a good friend of mine, Dan Long, and I were just talking the other day and just were thinking about him and you know, remembering him. And it's just one of those things that, so many people know him, know he and Chris and throughout the valley. And we gathered a group of people here, you know, again, about 11 months ago. And it was a tribute to John. And there were several people in studio. We did that for a couple hours, heard great reports back, of course, but the tape was lost, and so we didn't have an immediate podcast. And then Ray Amaya, who also was on there, got it together off of a tape from George, one of our listeners, who just happened to tape it. And so that's out there if you, for those of you who want to, I don't know, reminisce a little bit with us. Of the history in this valley and the impact that this great person had. We all woke up with him for years and years, right? But anyway, that's out there, as well as on the financial side, the pure financial side of things. Hey, there's also out there, why is my portfolio not doing as good as the market? And I've had a whole lot of feedback from that. from people saying, you know, I never really understood the indices like that before. I never really thought of it as what my objective is. And in this world right now where there's a whole lot of information of just, hey, buy the index, but what index? What do we mean, right? That might be very helpful. So those two of them out there that are specific you might look for on the website. We get good feedback from those. All right. Now, let's go. I want to kind of recap today because this is, I don't know. These are things that are very much on my heart and in my head. And that is this whole idea that I don't want you to feel frustrated or defensive when I come across as perhaps frustrated, and I know I do, that people live in this dark place of everything being wrong. And it's an intellectual place, so it's really hard for them to think in terms of anything but that they're smart and that they're plugged in and they're being wise with their investments. And it's a hard place to break through. I get that, because actually I think that's the biggest problem. People can get over the emotions, as I said the first hour. We can learn not to be emotional with our investing. That's possible. It's not done overnight. It's a process. But people can stop being emotional much easier than we can shut down our intellect and recognize that we really aren't as smart as we think we are. We really aren't capable of knowing what the future is, period. And that's why I keep coming back to this when I keep saying this, is something that's very important in our own management of money, management of our life, frankly, is that we have got to understand that we don't know certain things, and we can't. We can't time the market, and if you just kind of stop trying to think about it that way, it actually helps you. It helps clarify. When you quit trying to figure out when the world is going to end, life is a whole lot more fun. It's easier. And frankly, I don't mean to be disrespectful, but it's boring. People get to be bores when all they do is talk about what's wrong and what's bad and bitch and moan and complain, and they're just not really very much fun to be around. But here's the point. You didn't tune in for like, you know, how to be a nicer person, more fun to be around, party-going guy. No. But they're terrible investors. It's completely self-destructive behavior. It's no different than having a drug habit. I have a negative input habit. I'm addicted to negative inputs. I'm addicted to reading constantly on how the world is ending. I'm addicted to going to parties with people that only talk about how everything is falling apart. I'm addicted to constant flow of horror and figuring out how the world's going to end. It's an addiction. I'm 100% sure it is. And I know it sounds like I'm just lecturing at you, and I'm sorry, and I don't mean to do that. I just get excited. I have a constant flow of data, too. So does everybody. But the choice is ours. The choice is ours. You either can live in abundance. You can choose abundance. You can choose to have an attitude of abundance. Or we can choose that it's all limited. That we're going to run out of oil, but we didn't. That the world's going to have too many people in it, but it didn't. We won't be able to feed everybody, but we do. And particularly in America, we get to all weigh an extra 30 or 40 or 50 pounds because we are so well fed. I know how uncomfortable it is to be on airplane because that's what I did yesterday to get here. And, you know, it is. It's a real chore to be able to go thousands of miles in a few hours and sit in a chair, relatively comfortable chair, and be served drinks. I know how much that is awful and horrible, and you should feel sorry for me. But that's the kind of freedom that we have that we've never had in history. We can choose to figure out how it's all going to end and how it's all going to go away, but that's a huge bet. Or we can live in prosperity. We can get the fact that one more time I will say it. We've won the lottery. We won. We won. We're born in America, the greatest nation ever. Ever. Nothing's even close on the planet. No, it has more opportunities to be whoever you want to be. Succeed or fail. And still really not fail. During the most abundant time man's been on earth. We won. We won. Let's not try to figure out how we lost. I hope everybody has a great weekend. And I do thank you so much for tuning in. Shoot us your comments or questions. Have a good one.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzel. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436.
Investment advisor representative Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated and Petzl Financial Consultants are not affiliated companies. These are the opinions of Dave Petzl and are based on information from sources believed to be reliable but may change as information changes or becomes outdated. Nor should any opinion contained herein be construed or considered as a solicitation to buy or sell any particular investment product. Indices mentioned are unmanaged and cannot be invested into directly. Asset allocation and diversification strategies cannot fully guarantee against loss. The past performance does not guarantee future results.